So hi, hello and welcome. Oliver Kim is my name and welcome to another episode of Talk Smart. And in this episode today, I would like to talk about language and whether language is able to influence the way that we view the world. Well, normally we use language to reflect that, what we are experiencing. So if I say I feel cold, well, then I use the language to describe how I feel. Well, that's of course nothing new. The interesting question now is does it also work the other way around? So can the language that we use influence the way that we perceive and view things and our reality? Well, the idea that language can influence the way that we think is called the so-called the Sapir-Whorf hypothesis. It's also known as linguistic relativity. And this idea states that languages not only reflect our way of thinking, but it's also able to shape the way that we think. This hypothesis became known in the 1950s, and it basically states that people from different cultures and languages view the world differently and organize their reality differently. The way that they think is influenced by the grammar and vocabulary of their language. And to bring it directly to the point, there are certain thoughts and ideas that can only be thought in a particular language. And these ideas and concepts do not exist in other languages. So in this episode today, I'd like to give you several examples that illustrate this point. So first of all, people might organize space and time based on the language that they use. So recently, researchers from Stanford University, they conducted the following experiment. They showed people speaking different languages picture cards with faces of people of a different age. The researchers then asked the people to arrange the cards according to the age of the people that were depicted. People who speak English arranged the cards from left to right. This basically reflects the direction of their writing, with the youngest people on the left and the oldest people on the right. For them, time flows also from left to right. People who write Hebrew arranged the cards from right to left, and this too reflects their writing. And there is the Australian Aborigines, the Kuk Tayori, I hope I pronounced this correctly, and they do not use the words left and right, which are relative to the observer. Instead, they use the terms north, south, east, and west. So instead of saying, what are you holding in your left hand, they would say, what are you holding in your northeast hand? So unlike English speakers, they use an absolute reference system for space and not a relative one like speakers of other languages. The language that they use essentially forces them to stay oriented at all times, and indeed, they have a much less problems staying oriented in a new surroundings compared to speakers of other languages. So now how did they arrange the cards now? Well, maybe you've already guessed it. They arranged them from east to west. Why not from west to east? Well, that has to do because this is the direction of the sun moving, which moves from east to west, which also reflects time. Color perception is another example that I'd like to give to you. And this example demonstrates how language can influence cognitive ability. In the Russian language, for example, there is no single name for the color blue. If an English speaker says the pen is blue, then the pen could be any shade of blue, from light blue to dark blue. The Russian language requires the speaker to make a distinction. The person must say the pen is light blue or the pen is dark blue, because a general term for blue does not exist. Researchers found out that speakers of the Russian language are indeed capable of keeping apart different shades of blue much better than speakers of languages which do not force speakers to make this distinction. In short, learn to speak Russian if you want to improve your color perception. Now, how can this be explained? Well, how can language influence the perception of color? Well, I think the explanation is not even that difficult. The language Russian requires the people to distinguish different colors, and for this reason, the people have simply more training in distinguishing the colors. Seeing different colors can therefore also be learned. George Orwell's book 1984 describes the language newspeak, which serves as a further example of the Sapir-Whorf hypothesis. In this language, the meaning of vocabulary words was controlled by the government to make certain thoughts not thinkable anymore. So for example, the word free in Newspeak could be used only to in context such as the dog is free of lice, but it could not be used in the terms like freedom in thinking or freedom of speech or something like that. The question that I now ask myself is if there is no word for a particular idea or concept, does it mean that the people are not aware of the existence of this concept at all? In the Arapaho culture, for example, there is only one word for father and for uncle. Does this now mean that the child of the culture is not able to differentiate between his or her own father and the uncle? Well, I personally think it's not so, but it's something that the anthropologists have to answer. As so often, I think that the answer is somewhere in between. There are certainly many concepts that depend very strongly on language, and other concepts may simply not have a particular vocabulary word for it. I want to give you a second example. Traditional Japanese language does not have the word for privacy. Now, does this mean that the concept of privacy is completely absent in Japanese culture? Certainly, different cultural perceptions concerning privacy do exist, but I cannot imagine a complete absence of this concept. Apparently, there was now a need for a word, and for this reason, the English word for privacy was assimilated into the Japanese language and is now pronounced "puraibashi." Well, the consequence of the Sapir-Whorf hypothesis is quite far-reaching. Essentially, it states that it's not possible to translate text from one language to another without losing meaning. On the lighter side, I did find some words that cannot be easily translated, and here's my personal collection of words which exist in the German language but are difficult to translate into English. It's very easy in German to make new nouns by joining several words together, and so this also explains why some of these words are quite long. So I'm going to now give you a couple of examples here, which are, basically these words exist in the German language, but there is no comparable word in English, so you have to simply describe what it is. Torschlusspanik. It's a feeling of fear that one loses opportunities as one gets older. It's called Torschlusspanik. Zechpeller. This is a person who does not pay for the food that he or she consumed in a restaurant. Politikverdrossenheit. This translates into something like a weariness or a tiredness of politics. And it's often attributed to low participations in elections. And they say, it's because of Politikverdrossenheit. People are just weary of politics. Zwangsbeglücken. This is to make someone happy against their will. So for example, if I invite you for dinner and make you eat the food and you don't like the food, but you have to eat it, then I'm zwangsbeglücken you. A Geisterfahrer is a car driving in the wrong direction on the road. Fernweh is a desire to go to another country. It can be compared to homesickness, but it's just the other way around. Well, and I do have a couple of points for discussion here. Can you come up with English words that cannot easily be translated into other languages? And do you know of any concepts or ideas for which there is no appropriate word? It's an interesting one. I think I'll leave it at that again. I hope that you, again, have some food for thought. I wish you all the best and see you around next time. Bye-bye.